This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 28th of April 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated at the 27th of April 2023. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And we're very pleased to welcome Chris Atkinson, who is on the staff of the Hampshire Chronicle, who is a guest reader with us today.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are hundreds hit the trail for the 10th anniversary park run, city restaurant closes its doors, and scouts pack streets for St George's Day. So we start with the first headline story.
Hundreds hit the trail for the 10th anniversary park run. Winchester Park Run celebrated 10 years since it began with cake, some of its original runners, and of course, the weekly 5K. Last Saturday, April the 22nd, a total of 435 participants took part in the milestone event at North Walls Recreation Ground. Run director Sarah Witt welcomed everybody with some impressive statistics since the first run in April 2013. The anniversary run was the 434th event to be held in Winchester, with 15,878 different people taking part across the decade. The thousands of runners have run a total distance of 586,090K, which is 1.5 times the distance to the moon. As well as participants, there have been 1,340 different volunteers, with the success of the event relying on run directors who set up and clear up the course, timekeepers, barcode scanners, and marshals who give up their time for free. Volunteer coordinator Anne Stanhope was given a special mention. She ran in the first event and has volunteered at Winchester 291 times, as well as running 207 park runs. Anne was asked to kick off the anniversary run in recognition of her long-standing commitment. Runners and volunteers celebrated with a spread of post-run cakes ahead of the official anniversary date on April 27th. Winchester is one of the 1,100 park runs across the UK. The free and weekly community 5K run takes place on Saturday mornings, with a 2K junior park run on Sunday. Anyone can take part, with no time limit on completing the route.
City restaurant closes its doors. Another restaurant in Winchester has closed its doors for good in the face of rising costs. Prezzo in Jury Street is just one of 46 closures announced by the Italian restaurant group. The closures, which affect 810 workers, come after utility costs rocketed by more than double. It said the shake-up would impact a raft of sites where footfall is still below pre-pandemic levels, and leaves more restaurants in busier shopping destinations such as retail parks or tourist hotspots. This follows the closure of several city centre food businesses, including Republic of Pizza and Desserts in the High Street and the award-winning Black Rat. Prezzo said the closure was necessary to protect the business in the face of rising costs. Dean Challenger, chief executive of Prezzo, said, "We believe the tough decisions we are making today will ensure Prezzo can continue serving communities with high-quality, accessible Italian-inspired meals for many more years to come."
Scouts pack streets for St George's Day. The annual St George's Day Scout Parade in Winchester returned with triumphant success at the weekend. The parade marched through the city, beginning at Colebrook Street car park and heading around the statue of King Alfred. Around 800 children were led by scout leaders past the Guildhall and into the cathedral. It truly was a sight to behold, as the streets of Winchester were lined with hundreds of patriotic residents cheering as the troops of scouts, beavers, and cubs marched with military precision to the sound of brass instruments. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, was in attendance, and each unit paid respect to her with a salute as they marched past the Guildhall. The Mayor later said, "It was my pleasure to attend the parade yesterday. All of the Cubs, Scouts, and Beavers should be extremely proud of themselves and the standard they set." The event culminated with a service at the cathedral.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Alan, Geoffrey Martin Allen, known as Jeff or Pop, at Winchester Hospice on the 16th of April, aged 91. Beach, Brian Beach, on the 18th of April, aged 73. Guest, Graham Guest, at Winchester Hospice on the 10th of April, aged 88. Hannah, Gillian Ruth Hannah, at Winchester Hospice on the 6th of April, aged 91. Hunt, Irene Hunt, aged 76, at Marlfield Care Home, Alton, on the 31st of March. Orlebar, Tasmin Orlebar, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 17th of April. Payne, Catherine Diana Payne, on the 5th of April at Durban House Nursing Home, Romsey, aged 72. Seeley, Martin James Seeley, on the 26th of March at Mountbatten Hampshire Hospice. And now we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment, headed Emotional Intelligence, or EI. As I write this column, a government minister has resigned following allegations of bullying from those he worked with. Standing down, he strongly defended his robust management style, sparking a debate about appropriate behaviour at work and how a leader should treat their team while trying to get the job done. This reminded me about emotional intelligence, defined as the ability to understand and manage your own emotions and those of the people around you. According to psychologist Daniel Goldman, people with a high degree of EI know what they're feeling and what their emotions mean and how they can affect other people. It's been said that although everyone grows old, not everyone grows up. Anecdotally, in almost every field, there are leaders who, despite a high degree of competence, experience, and influence, seem to lack a basic level of emotional intelligence. Even when this doesn't constitute actual bullying, it can make for a very unpleasant working environment, with the leader oblivious to the effects of their behaviour. Goldman suggests that it's entirely possible to grow in emotional intelligence by focusing on five key areas: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. Knowing how you're feeling, considering how your emotions and actions influence those around you, knowing your strengths and weaknesses, and operating from a basis of humility would be considered essential leadership skills these days. Being able to regulate and remain in control despite the heightened emotions of others is also vital. And at a basic level, it is helpful to know why you're doing your job and what ultimately motivates you. The Bible has plenty to say about these qualities, especially in the book of Proverbs. A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit saps a person's strength. Chapter 17, verse 22. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered man. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn his ways and get yourself ensnared. Chapter 22, verse 2. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. Chapter 18, verse 2. On the subject of empathy, Brené Brown notes that to understand and share the opinions and feelings of others requires simply listening, holding space, withholding judgment, emotionally connecting, and communicating that incredibly healing message of "you're not alone." Brown suggests it is possible for anyone to learn empathy, but it requires vulnerability and bravery, which can be tough for those who've not developed in social skills or experienced the empathy of others growing up. There can be many reasons for this, but it's never too late to start. Achieving things at any level requires, at its most basic level, the ability to get on with people, which means reaching out and building relationships. That requires insight into how you come across to others, and a sense of how your own emotions are driving you. For me, continuing to invest in my emotional intelligence is always going to be a fundamental necessity for leadership, and even more than that, for life. And this is from Nigel Hemming, senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Right, we now move on to the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write in the traditional way to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. The first letter I'm not going to read out in full, but it's slight inform. I think you'll understand why I'm not going to read the whole letter out when I read it. It starts off, is it possible to purchase photographs from the Chronicle's archive? Anyway, the editor's note at the end of this letter is quite interesting information. Unfortunately, we don't have any archives at our office. All our physical archives are at the Hampshire Record Office in Winchester. They may be able to get a better copy of the paper, but I'm afraid the negatives are sadly long gone. So that's sort of useful information. So, right, we'll now go on to the letters. We've got 10 letters this week. Some of them, how shall I put it, are a little bit short, shall I say, pithy. Anyway, we'll come on to those. Anyway, we'll start off with the first letter now,
which is entitled Wrong Road, and it's from Chris Gillam. Congratulations on your Back to Basics editorial, April the 20th, drawing attention to the obvious truth that we must, quote, get out of the mindset that we should allow continued growth of the road network, unquote. An obvious truth that our MP Steve Brine and Hampshire Transport portfolio holder Nick Adams-King seem unable to perceive. The imminent examination in public, that's in brackets, in brief, EIP, of the hugely expensive M3 Junction 9 scheme, with its grotesque addition of carbon emission, ought to make us focus on the complete failure of transport policy to take into account either government or local council climate action plans. A month ago, in this paper, we had the county leader, Rob Humby, celebrating the Transport for South East, in short, that's TFSE strategy, as, quote, a great step forward towards transforming transport infrastructure towards greener travel, unquote. The TFSE strategy, in fact, amounts to the very opposite of this. It brings together for the region real plans to build all the superhighways in the wish list of the road lobby, with completely unfinanced and empty promises of better public transport and active transport facilities. Alice's White Queen stated that with practice one could believe, quote, as many as six impossible things before breakfast, unquote. So councillors Humby and Adams King are clearly well practiced in the reconciliation of impossible contradictions. But the county has to decide which side it is on, that of its action plan to reduce emissions or its business as usual mindset, dedicated to increasing motor traffic. Winchester City Council also needs to make it clear, which it has so far declined to do, that its action plan is incompatible with support for the M3J9 scheme. That letter is from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Letter entitled World War II Tributes by John Lander. Towards the end of February, you were kind enough to publish a letter from me seeking information that would enable me to trace more descendants of Sparshot College students who were killed during the Second World War. By the time the history of the college, a place of transformation, was published last October, I knew of just one family, with whom it had been a privilege to spend a fascinating and moving afternoon. Helpful responses to my letter from your readers have enabled me to make contact with four more families, and to identify another former student who was killed, but not recorded in minutes of college meetings. Plans are now being finalised, albeit 80 or so years after their deaths, to provide, for the first time, a memorial bench with a suitably worded plaque giving details of seven students who were killed in the service of their country. They were all aged between 22 and 25 years of age. It is hoped that their descendants will be able to meet together during the summer to remember again the sacrifices of their ancestors. My email address, jandplander@btinternet.com. That letter was by John Lander of Gravel Lane, Barton Stacey.
This is a very short letter, from Jean Forster, headed Missing Homes. Where have convalescent homes gone? May we have them back, please? That's from Jane Forster, Edgar Road, Winchester. And it's followed by a not quite so short letter, headed Not So Smart, from Simon Lever. I am pleased and relieved smart motorway plans have been cancelled. Between the M3 and the M27 have been scrapped. Chronicle, April the 20th. All motoring organisations and anyone experienced of driving on a smart motorway, especially if they need to take refuge on a hard shoulder, will resonate with the cancellation of such dangerous plans. The fact that so much money has been wasted is disgusting. National highways must have been aware of how lethal motorways are without hard shoulders. It's a pity that common sense and real advice was not imposed earlier. The good news is that they are being scrapped. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
G.N. Barrett writes about what he thinks is a waste of time. Here we go again, voting for local councillors. Waste of time, really. You have an issue or problem? Inform local councillor. What do they do? Give you some pathetic reason, just like going to the council. It is passed on to an employee. Again, some excuse. Neither will get up off their backside and look into the issue. Same as a family who has mental issues. Neighbours are allowed to harass them as much as they like when the victims complain to the council. Within 2 or 3 days, there are anonymous allegations. to police and social services about treatment of their child. Then, with other issues, the child is removed from the family. That's from G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
Another short letter from Alan Parker, entitled Seat of Power. To all voters in Hampshire, before you vote for your favourite councillors, ask them to make a commitment to install proper bench seating in Middlebrook Street in Winchester, a facility so long denied to visitors, open brackets, in particular to all those with mobility issues, close brackets, by the current City Council. That letter was by Alan Parker of Berwick Close, Winchester.
And this letter from George Spencer is headed Support City. Last season, Winchester City Football Club made history by winning promotion to the Southern League Premier Division, and they have continued to do so this season by staying there after being tipped for relegation almost from the get-go. Now they have ambitions to overhaul their ground with an artificial pitch and a new community clubhouse, which will provide a first-rate facility for all Winchester teams, including ladies, juniors and disability teams, to play and train on, as well as a space where the entire community can come together and co-create a more united future for Winchester through their passion for the sport. Most of the funding has been invested, and we need just £100,000 more to make this a reality. And this is where you come in. While this sounds like a daunting amount, it would be achieved if everyone in Winchester District donated £1. So give what you can and become a part of your local team's future. The link to the GoFundMe page can be found on the club's Facebook and Twitter profiles. And that is from George Spencer, Anstey Road, Alton.
Thanks for a season to remember, writes John Airy. Can I, on behalf of everyone, thank that tremendous group of players, Davo and his amazing staff, for making our season one of the most enjoyable and exciting we've had the pleasure to be involved in. That's the Winchester City Football Club. Not only have they shown what they're truly capable of achieving, but what a decent group of people. The volunteers and fans have truly shown through their continued support and commitment what non-league community football is all about, along with much appreciated support from MP Steve Brine. We now have the ability to continue to make history at this wonderful football club, and hopefully it won't be long before we are competing with more of our close Hampshire neighbours. That was written by John Airy, Mortimer Close, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Trust Trumps by Donald Black. The article in your paper last week stated that the judge who refused the Friends of River Park to have a judicial review was influenced by the City Council stating that it would behave correctly in the future. This acknowledges that it behaved wrongly in the past. The land is held in trust for the people of Winchester. And if councillors feel that they can ignore this, then, as council elections are coming up, it is surely an opportunity for voters to make a stand on this important issue and vote against, regardless of their political views, the Liberal councillors who control the City Council and are responsible for this decision. The issue of trust is more important than local politics. That was by Donald Black of Sarum Close, Winchester.
This last letter is from Julian and Guinevere Harvey about something they refer to as an eyesore. I wish to register a complaint, I suppose that should be we wish, strictly speaking, to register a complaint in the strongest possible terms to the excrescence which has been added to 58 Hyde Street. We lived in that house for many years and always understood it to be in a conservation area, and that the row of three Georgian houses were Grade 2 listed. It has been an eyesore for several months under scaffolding, but now the bricks are revealed and they are entirely out of keeping with the rest of the house and that of the house next door and the one beyond. They should have used bricks which are in keeping in both colour and size, instead of what looks to us like industrial bricks. We took a great deal of trouble when making a round, raised structure in the garden to use the right bricks. They are available locally. That strong letter is from Julian and Guinevere Harvey, Danes Road, Winchester.
Right, we next have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by first person.
Editorial comment. Now's the time to put on your trainers. If there has ever been an issue of the Hampshire Chronicle to inspire people to get active, then this is certainly it. We've read with admiration the stories of people taking on the London Marathon last weekend, pounding the streets while also raising money for good causes, and even more remarkably, wearing an unbelievable costume. And commend reality TV star Josh Patterson, who is coming to Winchester as he attempts to run 76 marathons in 76 cities in 76 days. But we really want to give a big shout out to the wonderful Winchester Park Run, which has marked its 10th anniversary. Park Run is an excellent free initiative that inspires people from all across the country to get up and get active. And the Winchester event is a brilliant example of the community coming together. The volunteers who help every week and the runners who actually get up and get there each time, we salute you all. Now, maybe it's time for the Chronicle staff to dust off their running shoes and prep for the return of the Winchester Marathon, M-A-R-A-F-U-N, in September.
And this is from Khalid Aziz, and it's entitled Rio Ever the Eye-Opener. I write from Rio de Janeiro, here for a family wedding of a Winchester couple, now based in Kingsworthy. She is originally from Brazil. It was a lockdown romance, initially conducted entirely through Tinder, the dating app. She then in Bournemouth, and he in Winchester and London. It took several electronic encounters before COVID rules eventually allowed face-to-face contact, a picnic in the New Forest. Love eventually found a way, and so did the UK end of the family find its way a couple of years later to the other city that never sleeps. I was last here on a trade mission 30 years ago. Little has changed, and yet much has changed. Despite the vagaries of left and right politics and several bouts of mega inflation, which makes the UK's current inflationary travails look positively balmy, most people look happy. They are still building cars and passenger jets, some of which operate out of Southampton Airport. On the surface, the place is booming. The hotels are full, with conferences bringing in an international crowd. Our hotel is hosting a defence conference, actually arms sales. Fancy a few fighter jets? Come to Rio. The traffic is still terrible, but there's clearly an elite who now go everywhere by helicopter. Scores of individual helicopters buzzed over our hotel daily, visiting the must-see Christ the Redeemer. Aerial tourism is flourishing, with helicopters circling the Corcovado disturbingly in opposite directions. 30 years on, the favelas are still thriving, with the largest now numbering 200,000 slum dwellers, dodging poverty, drug dealers and trigger-happy police in equal measure. Who would be a child of the favela? However, in general, just as in the UK, the people appear well fed. They should be. With the rainfall of Wales and the heat of the tropics, everything grows like billy-o. The thing to remember about Brazil is that they were colonised by Portuguese, not Spaniards. We had to remember our obrigados rather than gracias when thanking people. Even in somewhere as cosmopolitan as Rio, English is not spoken by many. The wedding itself was glorious fusion. It was set in a purpose-built wedding venue, half rainforest, half Disneyland. Soundstage complete with an arched bridge spanning Abel Pool, into which splashed a waterfall. It made for great photos. The bride, tall, elegant, and stunning, in a dress that had the matrons in attendance muttering their approval and dabbing their eyes. As is the modern way, bride and groom eschewed religion and went for a celebrant who jollied us along in Portuguese and English. The happy couple had written their own vows. The bride spoke hers in English, and the groom, my nephew, made a really good fist in Portuguese. We were provided with crib sheets so both sides could show appreciation at the appropriate times. As is also the modern way, they already have a one-year-old. He was pressed into service as ring-bearer and was judged a success. A knees-up is a knees-up in any language, and honour was satisfied on both sides. There was a cake, a statuesque affair, but only for show. Apparently the Brazilians don't go in for wedding cakes, opting instead for photogenic wooden fakes. You'd have needed a Kango hammer to cut this one. Instead, there was a myriad of delightful sweet delicacies. Bride and groom enjoyed themselves, as did the congregation. The airline certainly did well out of it all. And, of course, we now don hair shirts and ask ourselves if it was worth a round trip of 12,000 air miles just for a wedding. Some, including the time-poor best man, just for a couple of days, to be at his brother's side. Well, it was. And very soon, jets will be flying on carbon-neutral, sustainable fluid, and we shall then be guilt-free.
There are no special announcements this week. Sunrise is around a quarter to six in the morning, and sunset is about quarter past eight in the evenings. Just a reminder about the Winchester Talking Newspaper annual general meeting on Thursday, the 18th of May, at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. That's returning to our previous venue. There will be talk by Kimberly Barber, who is, of course, the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, and that will be followed by afternoon tea, and, of course, everybody is welcome. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Inside story of Papers, Life and Times. Publishing a review of a talk about the history of the Hampshire Chronicle is undoubtedly journalism feasting on itself, especially when the writer is a former reporter. But Barry Sherlock's account achieved a rare thing. Firstly, he made the subject matter easily accessible for his audience, who happily sipped wine and oohed and aahed at his revelations. And secondly, he was pinpoint accurate, when many attempts at portraying the industry still all but stoop to us sporting a Mac and pork pie hat. The Chronicle may well end up lining your kitty litter tray, but it's actually not only one of the oldest newspapers in the country, it truly has also survived against the odds. Barry's talk, The Hampshire Chronicle, 250 Years of News, was given to the Friends of Winchester Cathedral in the Paul Woodhouse Suite at the Cathedral. It heard that in the early years it was shuffled between owners and relentlessly hemorrhaged money. Somehow it survived, defiantly refusing to capitulate to governments bent on shutting it down. Barry delivered the 251 history pithily and at a canter. I don't know about you, but I find that talks which self-indulgently verbally wallow leave me in need of a stiff gin. Well, his was the reverse. There were some real gems, such as the paper breaking the world exclusive of the engagement of Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. The sort of royal scoop that makes national news editors salivate liberally all over their keyboard. He told how the paper has seen it all, from the Battle of Trafalgar to the death of Napoleon, the Crimean War, and the assassination of America's President Lincoln. Apparently, there wasn't one Winchester College riot, but many, which must have demanded veritable acres of excitable coverage. But what Barry brought out brilliantly is how journalism isn't a 9-to-5 job, it's your life, and often an enduring passion. James Lyndon, the Southampton printer and schoolmaster who launched the Hampshire Chronicle on a hot summer's day in 1772, battled on for 6 years before plunging into bankruptcy. Another editor, or rather editrix, to feature was Monica Woodhouse, who slickly ran the newsroom for more than 50 years last century. Barry said Monica wanted the Chronicle to do what it said on the masthead, to chronicle the lives of Hampshire residents. This is a role the paper still takes seriously today. Here's hoping it's still around the next time Winchester College riots. Though a future flashpoint is more likely to be access to social media rather than access to beer, and they probably won't threaten the head with axes. But you never know.
Call for older people post. Meon Valley MP, Flick Drummond, is backing calls for the introduction of a Commissioner for Older People and Ageing. Mrs. Drummond went to a parliamentary reception to support setting up the role, backed by groups including Independent Age, Centre for Ageing Better, Age UK, and National Pensioners Convention. The groups have argued that the UK's population is ageing, but issues are stopping older people from having a comfortable retirement or playing a positive role in society, including ageism and a lack of job opportunities. Problems include more than 2 million people aged 65 or older living in poverty, with many older people also experiencing diminishing health and mobility. However, Age UK research shows that in the spring of 2022, more than 170,000 hours of home care a week were not delivered. Mrs. Drummond believes a commissioner would help with joined-up policy making for older people, creating a voice for those over 65 and helping to shape how the country is governed. She said, "How older people interact, spend, help society when they retire, how they age and what services they need are becoming very big issues in the UK as the population ages. I think our society and policy making has yet to adjust to this new reality. For every person having a carefree retirement, there are other people struggling. I'd like to see the commissioner model extended to older people to help in the years to come with this area of our society and government."
New Vice Lord Lieutenant appointed. An Alsford man has been appointed as the new Vice Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. Colonel Charles Ackroyd succeeds Rear Admiral Ian Henderson, who retired after serving 6 years in the role. Colonel Ackroyd, who's lived in Hampshire all his life, served continuously in the reserve forces from age 17 to 60, firstly in the Royal Marines Reserve and then in the Parachute Regiment. He commanded Southampton University Officers Training Corps before becoming a senior staff officer and served in several appointments, including on operations. In his civilian career, he qualified and practiced as a solicitor before being appointed a district judge, sitting in Portsmouth for 20 years. On retirement from the bench, he moved to Alresford to enjoy its thriving community and the surrounding countryside. Colonel Ackroyd, who's been a deputy lieutenant since 2013, said it's a huge honour and a privilege to be permitted to serve His Majesty and Hampshire in this way. I'm thrilled. Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson said, I'm delighted that Colonel Ackroyd agreed to take on this role and look forward to working with him and our team of deputy lieutenants in the future.
Blast off as girl wins Blue Peter space race. An Alresford schoolgirl recently featured on Blue Peter to discuss her experiences after winning a competition. Bethany Turner, 12, won the Awesome Orbit competition, which asked participants to design an emblem which went on one of the first satellites to launch from the UK in January. She appeared on Blue Peter on April the 21st, where she discussed her experiences after winning the Awesome Orbit competition. As part of her prize, Bethany visited Airbus's Mars Yard in Stevenage, where she got to control a Mars rover and went to Spaceport Cornwall to see the UK's first ever satellite launch in January. She also received a Blue Peter badge to mark her accomplishment. Bethany's mum, Kirsty, said that winning the prize had a huge impact on her, saying, "It's been amazing because she actually started it 2 years ago. Because of COVID, things have been spread out a little bit. What it's meant is that every time she's gone and done each of these amazing experiences, she's grown in confidence. And everywhere we've been, we've met these amazing, influential individuals. These people who are just like her. She loves programming, and she loves art, and she loves space, and she's always been obsessed about space." Kirsty continued, "She's learnt so much about what she needs to do to make it in a to make a career in space, which is what she wants to do. So she's joined her STEM club." I'm not quite sure what that is, but at
science,
school.
Technology,
engineering, and maths.
Thank you, boys. Thank you. Now we all know. Anyway, she's joined that club at school, and she's chosen computer studies as one of her options and design and technology. And she's really aiming to go for triple science next year. Harsh Beer Sangar, Missions and Capabilities Director at the UK Space Agency, said, "It's fantastic to see Bethany has taken so much from her experience of winning the Awesome Orbit competition and enjoyed her time learning more about the UK's thriving space sector. I'm so pleased to hear how it has inspired her." And there are two lovely photographs here accompanying this article. There is Bethany being photographed with the Blue Peter presenter Muaka Mudenda. And then there's another larger photograph of Blue Peter winner Bethany checking out the Mars rover as part of her prize.
New debit cards to help people with dementia. A local woman has celebrated the launch of Sibstar, a debit card and app designed to help people who suffer from dementia and their families safely manage their spending. Jane Sibley, co-founder and Sibstar's CEO, was inspired to create a safer way for dementia sufferers to control their spending after noticing her mother, who suffered from dementia herself, began making unusual purchases. Jane told the Chronicle, "I thought that there had to be a better way to help vulnerable people financially and stop them from falling victim to scams." She continued, "The debit cards can be loaded with limits to prevent misspending of money. The launch comes as research shows that 9 in 10, or 89%, of those affected by dementia experience difficulties with managing their money day to day, and nearly half, 45%, find money difficulties a major cause of stress and worry. She added, "It all comes from lived experience, and we went through hard times and just want to help other families." The scheme gained traction when it was approved by the Alzheimer's Society Accelerator Programme, which invests in innovations to improve the lives of people affected by dementia. Jane said, "That's when we knew we had a good idea. The MasterCard debit card is preloaded with funds, then how and where the money is spent can be managed through the SibStar app, which is available on iPhone and Android. The app's money management controls include spend limits, ATM, online, phone switch on and off, instant freeze, auto top up, and real-time notifications, which can be changed instantly and remotely." Jane said, "It's been a journey of highs and lows, and we are constantly learning. The tech was harder to build than we initially thought, and not coming from a fintech background, it was a challenge. So far, the reception to SibStar has been positive." Jane said, "We've had really positive feedback. It gives people peace of mind, and there is something empowering about that." Co-founder Marty Orton told the Chronicle that the pair are looking to expand the business, which currently has 5 members of staff. He said, "We are now in the second round of investment, and our target is £700,000. Jane and Marty now look to the future. She said that their priority now is to build the brand into something with a lasting impact on millions of lives.
New head named at St Swithin's Prep. St Swithin's is welcoming a new head of the prep school. Liz Norris will be taking over from outgoing head Jonathan Brough in September. With more than 25 years of experience at an independent school, prep schools, she has experience working in leadership positions at 2 other girls' schools. As head of the prep school, she will be leading the team responsible for looking after the St Swithin students aged between 3 and 11. This includes the co-ed preschool. She said, "I'm very privileged to be joining St Swithin's Prep as head from September and look forward to leading the school as it continues to grow and develop. The school has such a wonderful setting and incredible facilities, and I'm keen to give pupils an educational experience that equips them for every aspect of life." Prior to being appointed, Mrs. Norris was interim head of prep at St. Helen's School, Northwood, and head of junior school at St. Margaret's School in Bushey, Hertfordshire. Recently, she's worked as a private education consultant, supporting reviews on curriculum design and assessment protocols, while also undertaking an MA in education. Outside of the classroom, she is a talented musician, playing the piano, flute, and cello, and has been a youth leader at her local church. Jane Gandee, headmistress at St Swithin's, said, "We are delighted to welcome Liz to St Swithin's as our new prep school head. She was the outstanding candidate amongst a group of very impressive applicants. Liz will be joining at an exciting time with record pupil numbers this year and trailblazing initiatives such as the Prep Parliament, which ensures every child has a voice in the development of the school. I'd also like to thank the outgoing head, Jonathan Brough, for the commitment, expertise, and sense of fun he's brought to his time at the school, and wish him a well-deserved retirement."
Big increase in council staff earning over £100,000. Sharp intake of breath round this table in the studio. The number of Hampshire County Council employees earning more than £100,000 has increased in the past year, according to a new report. The latest Taxpayers Alliance Rich List, published on Wednesday, April the 19th, revealed that 33 staff members of the County Council receive a six-figure salary in 2021-22, 7 more than in the previous 12 months. This means that Hampshire County Council has the highest number of employees who receive remuneration above £100,000 in the South East. Graham Allen, the council's director of adults' health and care, is the highest earner, with an annual salary of £173,000. Meanwhile, the council's chief executive, Caroline Williamson, was found to take home £164,909. Other members of the council's senior management team also cost the council more than £100,000. They include Steve Crocker, Director of Children's Services, over £172,000. Felicity Rowe, Director of Community Culture and Business Services, more than £157,000. Stuart Jarvis, Director of Economy, Transport and Environment, nearly £160,000. And Rob Carr, former Director of Corporate Operations, £116,775. John O'Connell of the Taxpayers Alliance said, "Many authorities continue with extremely generous pay and perks, including bonuses and golden goodbyes, whilst local people are facing a financial squeeze. Hampshire County Council said it needed to ensure its rates of pay were competitive but sustainable."
New College Centre names a fantastic addition. A sixth form college in Winchester has marked the official opening of its new building, with the former principal it is named after returning to cut the ribbon. More than 80 guests attended the official opening of the Carville Teaching Facility at Peter Simmons College on Friday, April 21st. Former principal Stephen Carville performs the traditional ribbon cutting ceremony. Stephen, who was principal from 2013 to 2018, and for whom this was his first formal return to the college, says, "It is an absolute privilege to be invited back today for the formal opening of the Carville building. Peter Simmons College has, and always will have, a very special place in my heart. It has been an immense joy to track the boundless successes of the college since my retirement, and I'm genuinely bristling with pride that the college has seen fit to name this wonderful building after me." Sarah Russell, principal of Peter Simmons College, added, "Stephen was principal for 5 years, but his contribution to the senior team and college stretches back to 2002, when he joined us after a few years working for Ofsted as a HMI. During his time, the college flourished, and his contribution to ensuring that quality remained at the heart of the college was immense. He brought rigour to policy and practice, wise counsel to his colleagues, and was well respected by his peers in the wider educational community. Comprising of 12 classrooms equipped with IT technology for teaching and learning, the Carville building will house the business, economics, and criminology classes. An energy-efficient heat recovery hybrid system and a solar PV panel system have also been installed to offset the building's electricity use. The building is a result of a successful bid for funding from the Department of Education and represents an investment into providing a sustainable, enhanced, and contemporary experience for students and staff alike."
Nurseries still falling short. A Winchester nursery has been told that it requires improvement despite making recent changes. Poppins Nursery and After School Care, based at the Carroll Centre in Stanmore, was given the rating by Ofsted after an inspection on March the 13th. This comes after the nursery was rated as inadequate last September, with inspectors saying that children's safety and welfare are compromised. This was followed up in November, when Ofsted was satisfied with the improvements. It comes after outgoing head Jewel Heller Dixon criticised the November inspection and said it was flawed. After the latest inspection, the report said, "Children are happy and settled. They confidently separate from their parents and respond well to caring staff. Staff support children to explore the learning environment through free play. Children use their imagination as they act out experiences from home. However, due to inconsistency in the quality of interactions, not all children are given the same learning experience as others. Since the previous inspection, safeguarding audits have been carried out to identify any weaknesses in procedures. All staff have undertaken safeguarding training, and the provider receives regular updates from the local safeguarding partners. This information is shared with staff to maintain awareness of current safeguarding topics. To further improve the quality of the early years provision, the provider should strengthen the support for staff to recognise when to adapt or replace activities, and embed further the new procedures for the supporting children with SEND. Barbara Guthrie, Chair of Trustees at the Carroll Centre, said it has been 6 months since our last visit from Ofsted, and the staff at Poppins Nursery and the trustees have worked tirelessly to improve the nursery's rating. Whilst it was disappointing not to be rated as good, the inspector did say that the nursery was very close to good, and we are confident that we will reach this rating within the next 12 months.
Full steam ahead for coronation celebrations. The historical Watercress line is hosting a royal celebration to mark the coronation. Running from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m, everybody will be invited to a relaxed afternoon of music and entertainment on Sunday, May the 7th. Taking place against the backdrop of Alsford Station, which will be decorated to go along with the proceedings, guests will be able to bring a big picnic, their chairs, tables and bunting to celebrate the special day. The Watercress line will have a stately programme, including a trumpet fanfare on arrival and a visit from a specially dressed coronation train. Music will be provided by Alder Valley Brass Band and 1940s-style singer Stephanie Bell. Winchester Morris men will be dancing and singing, whilst local personality Paddy Roadknight will compere. There will also be an informal jamming session to round off the afternoon for any musicians who might like to join in. The Watercress Line's Rebecca Daly said, "We have a busy programme of entertainment planned, and it'll be a chance to encourage community spirit and have fun together. Everybody is welcome, so please join us for a lovely afternoon of celebration."
Currys to quit retail centre. Currys in Winnell will be closing its doors for good in May. The shop, which sells electrical products, is located in the Moorside Road Retail Park and will close for the last time on Saturday, May 13th. A member of staff confirmed that the branch is closing as it is no longer economically viable after the landlord increased the rent. A spokesperson from Currys said, "Our Winchester store will be closing on May 13th as the lease comes to an end, and we will continue to focus on retail park stores. We've had discussions with all colleagues impacted by this decision, and they have been offered roles in our neighbouring stores."
Back garden houses get the go-ahead. A Winchester house, once proposed for demolition, will instead see two houses built on its back garden. Planners have approved the proposal for homes at Beechwood, a late Victorian property in Worthy Road, Abbots Barton. The scheme by local developer Millgate sparked 7 objections from neighbours on Abbey Hill Close and Salcott Road, who said the houses are too large and overbearing. In 2019, it was proposed that Beechwood should be knocked down and the whole site redeveloped with 4 houses. But Millgate thought again and instead have kept the house with the 2 new houses, a 3-bed and a 5-bed. Although the plot is not in the Winchester Conservation Area, it is considered a non-designated heritage asset. Objector David Whitmarsh addressed the planning committee and said, "We do not oppose the construction of dwellings, but we object to these. The proposed houses are much taller than the neighbouring houses on a site of rising ground. They will be overly dominant." Lynn Evans, planning agent, speaking in favour of the development, said Millgate has a strong track record of building high-quality homes that fit in with Winchester. She said Beechwood was one of the few remaining original properties, and most had either been knocked down or seen their garden redeveloped. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I commend the developers for working with residents and being constructive and prepared to change the design." Councillor Frank Pearson accepted the development would fit in with the area, adding, "It would be perverse to turn this down." The 9-member committee voted unanimously in favour.
Green corridor plan to link national parks. The Hampshire Hedge is an ambitious new initiative by countryside charity CPRE Hampshire to connect Hampshire's two national parks, the South Downs National Park and the New Forest National Park, with a nature recovery corridor of hedgerow. Any charity donations for the Hampshire Hedge from April 20th to the 27th are matched by the Big Give and doubled. Hedgerows play an enormously important role in boosting biodiversity, capturing carbon, improving food production, and enhancing our rural community. The countryside has lost over half of all hedgerows since 1945, and CPRE Hampshire believe it's time to turn this around. The Hampshire Hedge will wind its way through the central heart of Hampshire parishes and link woodlands, meadows, local nature reserves and sites of special scientific interest. It will start from Copythorne in the New Forest and finish at Compton on the edge of the South Downs near Winchester. Ellie Banks, hedgerow officer at CPRE Hampshire, said, "The Hampshire Hedge offers communities a great opportunity to work together to restore and plant hedges in their local areas. We provide training on the national crafts of hedge laying and offer some great resources to help communities learn surveying and hedgerow management to achieve the full benefits of their rich offerings." Boyd McCleary, vice chair of CPRE Hampshire, said, "We were certainly delighted to be selected to take part in the Fund Match campaign. As a charity, we rely on donations to be able to deliver on work for our local countryside. And this means that any donations we receive from individuals, communities and local businesses will be matched and doubled. The Hampshire Hedge is not just ambitious, but it's vital to our work in the Hampshire countryside."
Funds shortfall means trimmed down hat fair. Winchester-based charity Play to the Crowd has announced that the annual hat fair will return in 2023, albeit in a smaller way. The charity, which runs the Theatre Royal Winchester, learnt in November that it would no longer be funded by Arts Council England, or ACE, as a National Portfolio Organisation, or an NPO, despite a glowing assessment of its application. This yearly grant was a key part of funding the outdoor festival, with Play to the Crowd looking for alternative forms of funding. It has been announced that the charity has been successful in its application for the ACE's transition funding, which was available to organisations leaving the NPO. This allowed the charity to honour some costs already committed for this year's festival, and fundraising support to pivot to a new model for future festivals. The charity was also successful in its applications for a National Lottery Project grant and to Hampshire County Council's Leader Fund. Due to the reduced funding, the festival will take place over 2 days this year, on Friday, June 30th, and Saturday, July 1st. There will be no Hat Fair performances on Sunday. This decision allows the Hat Fair Carnival, a culmination of a 9-month-long project which features hundreds of school children and community groups from around Hampshire, to go ahead as planned on Friday to open the festival. The festival site will also be smaller than in previous years, focusing on the High Street, the Square, Cathedral Grounds, Abbey Gardens, and the back of the bus station in Busket Yard. Andrew Loretto, Hat Fair and Playmakers Director, says, "We can't wait to bring joy to the streets of Winchester again this summer. Our sincerest thanks to those who have come forward to support the festival this year. The footprint of the festival may be smaller, but we haven't compromised on the quality or range of the artists performing. This year's festival is packed full of Winchester's favourite hatters, a fantastic programme of commissioned works, as well as some incredibly talented local performers. There'll be something for everyone to enjoy. Details of the programme will be released soon."
Health Drive for Older Folk. Hampshire County Council is aiming to encourage older people to get involved with volunteering and exercise to be active and reduce health risks. At a cabinet meeting on Tuesday, April the 18th, the Director of Public Health at Hampshire County Council, Simon Bryant, presented a report on how lifestyle affects ageing, saying physical activity is called one of the best pills in medicine. "I think one of the challenges here is how we enable people to take these opportunities, whatever they are, whether it's walking or taking part in some exercise. Another alternative the County Council wants to promote within its elderly population is volunteering. Benefits include better health and well-being, as well as the chance to meet new people, be active, increased social confidence, and the opportunity to learn new skills and have new experiences." Leader of Hampshire 2050, Councillor Rob Humby, welcomed the recommendations. "To empower and facilitate residents to be happy, healthy and active as they age."
Winery licence decision stalled. A decision is yet still to be reached on the licence application for a Hampshire vineyard. As previously reported, Exton Park on Allen Farms Lane, Exton, has applied for an extension to its premises licence. The application proposes that the vineyard should have permission to supply alcohol to customers for consumption both on and off the premises from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday to Sunday. The vineyard already holds a premises licence permitting alcohol sales from Monday to Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. If granted, the licence will also allow the vineyard to hold events on its site. The Winchester City Council Licensing Subcommittee heard from representatives of both Exton Park and Exton Village. Various members of the public have opposed the application, raising concerns about increased traffic running through the village, as well as a possible rise in public nuisance. One of the objectors at the meeting said, "As someone who lives in this village, which is a beautiful part of the South Downs National Park and an area of outstanding natural beauty, we bought a house in that village because it's quiet, because it's a gentle place to live, and there will be an increase of traffic coming through regardless of what instructions I believe they put on their website about where cars should be directed." Meanwhile, David Freer Cook of Allen Farms Lane noted, "Of 23 objectors, 21 of them live on the proposed traffic access within the village. Of the 28 supporters, only 2 live on that access road, other than supporters who either work in the vineyard or some come from as far away as London. The applicant, Exton Park Vineyard LLP, said that they would be making provisions to ensure that any increased traffic through Exton Village would have minimal effect on residents. Lana Tricker, a lawyer from LT Law, representing Exton Park Vineyard LLP, said that the vineyard had held a number of events in the past under temporary event notices. She said, "No objections had been received in relation to the trading under the temporary event notices, so it shows that with this trading that we're planning, we have zero impact on the community whilst operating at the premises."
Students show off their inventive skills. Students were tasked with designing a fully functional chair that had to be made of corrugated card without using glue or tape in a design competition. The contest was held at Winchester College and saw schools from around Hampshire take part, including the Henry Beaufort School. The teams were judged on the attractiveness and the lightness of the chair, as well as how comfortable and stable the piece of furniture was to sit on. Ben Brown, design and technology teacher, said, "I'm delighted to say that out of the 8 teams, Henry Beaufort came a very credible 7th and 2nd, being just pipped to the post by a team from a school in Portsmouth. I'm incredibly proud of Team HB, who really showed their creativity and innovation, not to mention teamwork and a phenomenal work ethic."
Travellers leave a mess. At least 20 travellers' caravans that had pitched up on a private car park in Winchester are now gone. The caravans and work vans had been parked on the Hampshire County Council staff car park next to the Household Recycling Centre in Bar End. Several work vans were seen coming and going from the site, beeping horns and playing loud music. Last week, however, all of the vehicles left, with photos showing that litter has been left behind, with damage caused to barriers and cabins. A Hampshire Constabulary spokesman previously said that officers had attended the site.
Ukrainian choir hits the right note. Nearly 200 people came to the Chapel of St. Cross to attend a vibrant and powerful lunchtime concert presented by members of the Ukrainian community currently living in Winchester. Kalina, a community choir, was led by Olina Batovska, possessor of a rich mezzo-soprano voice, whilst the children's choral group was directed by Lala Smaglova, another highly professional solo singer. Lala performed two items on her own, accompanied by accordionist Vladimir Vasilenko. There was also some impeccable solo dances provided by Amelia Batovska and Anna Paniatova. Another solo contribution of a very high order was Margarita Doroshi's cello rendition of Gabriel Fauré's After a Dream. The Brothers of St. Cross are to be congratulated for organising this impressive display of the resilience and commitment of a community being welcomed in the city.
Reality TV star Josh, the City Marathon. Reality TV personality will be running a marathon in Winchester this weekend to raise money for the Samaritans. Josh Patterson, best known for appearing in Made in Chelsea, is currently in the middle of his run for 1 million challenge. He is aiming to run 76 marathons in 76 cities in 76 days. If successful, Josh will set a new world record as the first person to complete a marathon in every city in the UK consecutively. Josh will be in Winchester on April 30th. He will start at Winchester Cathedral, head south, and complete four loops of the River Itchen and Itchen Navigation Route, passing the support vehicle at Barfield Park and Ride, and then head back to the cathedral. He is expected to start at 9 a.m. and finish at 3 p.m. It will be marathon 63 out of 76. Mm. Speaking before the challenge, Josh says, "Having struggled with mental health myself to the point I thought about ending my life, I was fortunate enough to get support from several incredible professionals, my family and friends. My life has changed immeasurably since that moment, and I'm now in a place where I want to show others they are not alone, and things will get better. Through testing my own limits with endurance sports, I have built strength, resilience, and, best of all, a community I love. Setting myself near impossible challenges has been a vital tool to attract attention and to shine a light on mental health. Whether you are personally struggling or have been impacted by mental health through a loved one, I hope that this mammoth challenge will inspire people to reach out, speak out, and know they are not alone. Wayne Fletcher, Samaritan's Branch Director for Winchester, explained the work the charity does in the city. He said, "Our local branch is at Upper High Street and we have 95 volunteers. In March, we spent around £400 on phone calls, which is a central part of what we do. We do a lot of outreach work in the city. On Fridays, we have 3 volunteers outside the bus across who provide support and awareness to anyone who needs it. We also have people going into Winchester Prison and out and about in the community providing workshops. More recently, we've also been giving talks at the university. So far, Josh has raised £108,453 of his £1 million target. I'm quite sure how to do that.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
Baby steps for zoo arrival. Marwell Zoo is celebrating the birth of a rare Przewalski fold, an endangered species of horse. These horses were extinct in the wild from 1969 until 2008, and all of the Przewalski horses alive today are descended from just 12 captive individuals. The new fold was born on April the 15th to mother Setseg and father Noga and is reported to be doing well. Katie Folks, the assistant animal keeper in Hofstock, said, "Setseg is a good mum and her foal has been seen feeding well. She is separating herself and the foal from the group slightly, which is perfectly normal and that shows that she is being very protective. Visitors will be able to spot the new fold alongside last year's new arrival called Basil from the balcony of Cafe Grays, which overlooks the valley field. Przewalski's horses are listed as endangered on the International Union for Conservation of Nature's Red List of Threatened Species, with populations increasing thanks to zoo breeding programs. The work at Marwell Zoo has been crucial in returning these horses back to the wild, where populations are now increasing. And the foal will go on to be an important part of the European ex situ breeding programme." And it's accompanied by a photograph showing the mother, Setseg, and the little foal on the ground, as yet unnamed. So, on that note, we conclude our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And our very best thanks to Chris Atkinson from the Hampshire Chronicle, who is our guest reader today.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.